Hey, it's Dr. Jamie, and let me tell you about some amazing beef products that we love in our house. Certified Piedmontese is a healthier beef option that doesn't sacrifice flavor or tenderness. The cattle at Piedmontese are raised responsibly and carefully on family ranches across the Midwest, and they're healthier too. They're never given antibiotics, steroids, or hormones. They raise the rare Piedmontese breed through a ranch-to-fork approach that ensures traceability, environmental sustainability, humane animal handling, and responsible resource management at every step. Countless well-known chefs from across the country rave about the exceptional quality and flavor profile of Certified Piedmontese beef. The Certified Piedmontese program is a source-verified ranch-to-fork operation that's rooted in dedication to the land, ranchers, cattle, consumers, and products. Progressive ranching protocols such as the electronic identification tagging technology, database tracking initiatives, DNA testing to confirm heritage, and voluntary third-party audits ensure the beef meets the high standards of care, handling, and quality. Certified Piedmontese beef has fewer calories, less fat, and higher protein per ounce than beef from any other breed, making it an ideal source of lean protein for a healthy diet. A serving of Certified Piedmontese beef has even fewer calories ounce for ounce than salmon, yet it challenges the prime grade beef products in tenderness. The combination of leanness and tenderness results in a consistently healthy and delicious dining experience for those who will not settle for anything less. And, well, you guys, that's me. So go check out Certified Piedmontese. They have a Dr. Fit and Fabulous beef box, or you can order any of their products using my code DRFIT, DRFIT. Thank you, Certified Piedmontese. To the Fit and Fabulous podcast with Dr. Jamie Seaman. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Jamie, and welcome to the Fit and Fabulous podcast. It is so wonderful to have you back. Thanks for everybody who's listened to our previous episodes and shared them with all your friends, because today's episode is going to be one they want to hear. My guest today on the podcast is Dr. Susanna Soberg. She's an international leading expert in stress management using natural stressors as a tool. She did her PhD in metabolism at the University of Copenhagen and has contributed to a deeper understanding of our metabolism during stress and rest in humans. She's an expert in cold and heat therapy, functional breathing for optimized health and performance. She's also the founder of the Soberg Institute. Her science-backed program, The Thermalist Cure, is carefully designed by her, followed by many years of experience in research in cold, heat, and breath. She communicates and teaches for private and corporate places via her talks, workshops, and programs. One of her principles is to, quote, end cold to increase metabolism and prolong the benefits of chemicals in the brain. I'm so excited. Dr. Soberg, welcome to the Fit and Fabulous podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I am so honored to be here. I love to talk about this topic, so I'm just happy that you invited me here to talk on your podcast.
So you have a new book that's coming out called Winter Swimming, and I love hearing people's kind of back. Everybody has a story of what kind of brought them to what they're most passionate about, and why you spend, you know, you've dedicated your whole life to cold and heat and breathing. So tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you got into this space.
Yeah, it's kind of like a story that goes the other way around. Because usually people, they start with having a passion for winter swimming, and then they dive into the literature and to research what's the benefit about it. But I actually started the other way around, because I got interested in the benefits of it because I started researching in what is called the healthy brown fat. And when I started as a research assistant, it's called, before you become a PhD student, I researched the brown fat for a couple of years, but studied a whole year just reading about what is the brown fat, how is it activated, and why is this tissue in our body actually healthy? And just to just give a little bit of a recap, what is the brown fat, because now I've mentioned it. But the brown fat is actually our healthy fat in our body. It can increase our metabolism when it's activated. And the most potent way to do that is by cold. So as soon as we get cold on the skin, we activate the brown fat in our body, and that will increase our heat so we don't freeze to death. And that is going to take up sugar and fat from the bloodstream as fuel. And that is why it is a fantastic way of losing calories from the body. And that's going to eat off our white fat cells. So the white fat is our storage and the brown fat is going to eat off that storage. So that's kind of opposite these two kind of fats in our body. But I read a lot about this and I wanted really to figure out a way where people can use the cold or activate the brown fat in a non-pharmacological way. So how to do that? Well, the literature said, if you sleep in a cold room at 19 degrees, then you, for a month, then you increase your metabolism, get a better insulin sensitivity, and you will increase the amount of brown fat. And they saw this in obese subjects who slept only for a month at 19 degrees Celsius. I think that's amazing that you can get more brown fat out of that. So being a little bit amazed about that, I figured, well, in Denmark, we do a lot of winter swimming. What about cold water? Is that the same as cold air for activating brown fat? Or is it actually more potent because you also activate the sympathetic nervous system while you do this? So the cold shock, how does that affect activation of brown fat? And just fast forward to that idea, I kind of like pitched that for our professors and it was a little kooky at the beginning. It's like, well, really? I was like, yeah, I'm not a winter swimmer myself. Actually, I am afraid of the cold. So I'm not trying to get into this to prove anything. I just wanted to see what happened. So I was just really curious about how the physiology of the body works. And I've always been like that. So it's like, I just want to figure out how can we increase our metabolism and get rid of inflammation. So the root cause of many of our modern lifestyle diseases is inflammation. So wouldn't it be cool if we just by something natural, just walking into the cold water could decrease our inflammation in the body? I thought that was a good way to get started with my PhD. So that's, I kind of just did that.
Fascinating. So I am an OBGYN, so I deliver babies, and I know that babies have a lot of brown fat, right? It's really protective to them because they can activate this brown fat to maintain their body temperature because it's more metabolically active. Can you tell us what is the evolution of brown fat as we become an adult? Like, why is now suddenly as an adult that we need to start discovering ways to activate it? Are most people not activating their brown fat at all when they become an adult?
Yeah, so most people are born with brown fat, just as you said. You see that in the babies, and they have this very large, place on the back where they have all this brown fat because they are not able to shiver in the muscles. And because it's not developed for that yet, it has to like grow into that. It takes about 6 months up to 9 months before the muscles are developed enough to be able to shiver. So they need a lot of brown fat because the brown fat is going to be the first tissue in the body that's going to activate and increase heat. So babies are saved in this way. So they need a lot of it. But with time, as we get bigger in mass, the brown fat decreases. Probably because we, by evolution also, we don't need as much brown fat anymore because the muscles are going to help us and they grow with age. So as our mass and our surface get bigger, our brown fat gets smaller. But we can see that from the 1980s, though it's been a increase in obesity and type 2 diabetes. And we see that because of our lifestyle diseases more stressful and we have more sedentary work also. But it probably also has something to do with that we are not exposing ourselves to the natural stresses that we used to have or used to do earlier on because our houses are more isolated. We sit more indoor. We don't go outdoor as much. We are not as physical active as we probably were before the 80s. And we can see now that if you are the more cold, you can see, no, sorry, please cut that out. You can say the more you despise the cold, the more you actually need it, I think, because the more you despise it, it's probably because you haven't exposed yourself to the cold. And the more of a called sissy, like I was myself, you will be. And that's where you actually need it. So when you get a little bit exposed to the cold, you will feel it a bit painful, of course. But the more you do it, the more you get used to it and adapted to it. And then you won't feel it as painful anymore. And your brown fat will get activated continuously. So you have to use it, actually, not to lose it. That's also a way to look at it. So if you don't expose your brown fat to activation by getting cold, or actually also hot, then you will lose the cells. So they shrink. And we know that from scientific studies. We have seen this in mice studies, rodent studies, and also in human studies. So the study that I just mentioned before, where people, they sleep in a cold room for at 19 degrees Celsius for a month, they slept at 24 degrees in this room for another month, and then 27 degrees. And they saw that the brown fat cells shrink actually during these kind of warm temperatures, but not a lot. So it seems that with neutral temperatures, our brown fat disappears. And with that, we don't get an increase in our metabolism. And that could also lead to obesity, type 2 diabetes. So our modern comfortable lifestyle diseases today is not helping really our metabolism and our brown fat.
I was just about to ask that question. So if we don't activate it, we lose it. Can you actually grow your brown fat, or is it just you have to keep stimulating it just to hang on to what you have?
That's a good, really good question. So it seems like, and there's much more evidence in this in mice, but we can see that the brown fat can grow. You can get more brown fat cells or beige fat cells. So we have to distinguish. There is already brown fat cells in your body, and those can get more efficient by increasing mitochondria in the cells. So the mitochondria are the energy fabrics in your cells. The more you have of those in each of the cells, the more it can increase or activate and spend all the glucose and fat from your bloodstream. But it can also generate more heat. So it's like getting more efficient workers in your brown fat cells, you can say. But you can also increase, so the volume of them, but also the amount of them. So if you can transform a fat cell, so like a precursor cell, so a baby fat cell, you can say, which has not become white or brown, but if you can activate this cell, stimulate it with cold, then it will become more brownish, and we call them beige fat cells. So now we have the whole color scheme now from brown, beige, and white fat, but you can get more of them and you can get larger of them. So you can get more, yeah.
So is there a particular time in our life when initiating cold therapy is most helpful for turning these cells into beige cells or into brown fat cells? Because I think that, you know, what I'm seeing on social media, a lot of adults now jumping in the cold baths, and we're going to talk about kind of the optimal protocol for that. But is there a time in your life when it would be most advantageous? Is it when you're a child or when you're a baby to start getting cold exposure, or does that matter?
I think it's a really good question. And I think we would need a study where we follow people for a long time and see, does this matter compared to maybe our, I call us the comfort generation. Yeah. And I hope that we will be the last one. I hope that it's going to be better for our children and their children. But it's now that I hope we can talk about this and we can get this message out, because it's going to matter later on. I think it's a really good question. I think that if you expose yourself to cold already from, a young age, there is also scouts or people who work outside, they seem to have more brown fat. And it's because they are exposed to wind and they are exposed to different temperatures all the time. So it seems that that's going to activate the brown fat, because you have exposed your skin to different variations of temperature. So it's not only the very cold temperatures that's going to activate the brown fat, it's probably also the warm temperatures, because the brown fat is not only trying to increase our heat in our body to prevent hypothermia, but also hyperthermia. So by activating the brown fat, we will sweat easily, and that would keep us in a temperature balance. So I guess that is the purpose of the brown fat, is trying to keep your temperature at a good balance at 37 degrees Celsius, so your vital organs will be good and healthy, and the proteins not getting too warm, for example. But with time, when you expose yourself to a cold more and more, then you will have more brown fat, and you will also have multiple places. There's actually studies showing that if you have this very rare kind of cancer called, let me just see if I can pronounce it just a minute. There are studies showing in this very rare cancer type called pheochromocytoma, where they have a lot of brown fat because they have this benign, a benign tumor on the adrenal glands. And that means that the noradrenaline is being secreted all the time to the bloodstream, and noradrenaline is what activates the brown fat. And when that is activated all the time, we can see in these rare cancer type patients that they have a lot of brown fat all over the abdomen. And it looks really unhealthy because it's also not natural, of course. But what happens is, I think this is the fascinating part. They lose a lot of weight because they have this activation of their metabolic, they have this high activation of their metabolism all the time. So they lose a lot of weight. But when surgeons then remove this tumor, they can see that the brown fat disappears again, and it becomes normal, and they become normal weight again. So they gain weight again up to normal. So it means that the brown fat can definitely increase and be various places in the body. There is actually 6 places where we can find the brown fat shown by these studies as well. And it can grow in size and increase our metabolism, but it can also vanish again. If it can vanish completely, it seems so, actually. It seems that the brown fat can vanish over time, especially when we get in our, from 40 years old and up, it seems that it disappears a bit. So we don't know if obesity came first, and then because of the low insulin sensitivity, the brown fat gets inactivated, you can say, or it's because the brown fat is getting less and then we become obese. So we don't know if it's one or the other way around, but we can work
it's
on
so
our brown
interesting.
Fat.
Yeah. So like my children, I have 3 children who are 7, 9, 11 years old. And they will go outside in shorts, no coat on, you know, they're out in the cold, and we just think they're crazy children. But then you think about my parents in their 70s, in the winter months, when it gets cold, they want to go to Florida. They want to go down south where it's much warmer. And I'm just thinking of this now, this kind of like, observation that as we get older and we lose this brown fat, our resiliency for being in these cold environments goes way down. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, it's absolutely right. Yeah.
Okay. That is fascinating. So you have kind of admitted you were definitely afraid of the cold. You're researching this, looking into this. So how does one start to get more comfortable with being cold?
Yeah, that's a good question. There are different ways you can do this. And I'm glad actually I'm a good example, because I started out being one who didn't want to like try this out in practice, but convinced myself after reading all the literature, and I couldn't find a good reason not to. So I figured, okay, let me try this out and see if I can get through the pain. So what you can do is you can start exposing just feet or hands or face to cold water, just to get an idea about how does this actually feel, just to some body parts. I would say if you are really afraid of the cold, this is where you can start, just like minimum exposure. But you can also try and take a cold shower if you feel for that, and that's gonna give you a cold shock. Try to stand under the shower and have your exposure to the back and also to the front. So you will spread the drops more evenly on your body. Try to avoid it on the head, because that's going to just give you brain freeze and it's not really comfortable. You just need it on your body. You don't really need it on your head. But you activate your sympathetic nervous system in this way. That's your cold shock. And you will have the increase of noradrenaline and you will have an increase of dopamine and you will get super focused and super have a super drive afterwards. And this is really good if you want to go to a meeting or you want to do an interview afterwards. So you are really on afterwards because you have this high adrenaline going. But if you then get a little bit adapted in this way, I think that people should think about that the goal would be to do a cold water immersion, because that's where you really get the benefits, all the benefits. So I'll completely admit that I am a fan of the cold water immersion compared to the showers, because I think the showers, to me, that is also a little bit too stressful and I don't get that zen feeling afterwards because of the serotonin and the activation of the parasympathetic nervous system. And I like that. So, and also from a beneficial health side, I think that the cold water immersion could be the goal. But start in the shower if you are afraid of the cold, but you can also start with hands, feet or face. And then think about coming to the cold immersion afterwards. And then maybe have in mind that you don't have to do it that long. That is my research showing that you can do this by micro-stressing the body. So just increasing, So you can do this by
So let's talk about the optimal exposure time, you kind of found with your work.
Okay. So what we found in my studies was the minimum threshold for how much cold and heat you should do per week to get the health benefits. So we found that 11 minutes per week divided on 2 to 3 days and with 3 dips in the cold water and 2 sauna visits per day was enough to get the health benefits. And in the sauna, that was 57 minutes per week, also divided on 2 to 3 days per week. But in total, if you just look at the time, that corresponds to only making a cold dip that is 1 to 2 minutes. And sitting in the sauna, you only have to do that 10 to 15 minutes at a time. So it's really not that long exposures, but it seems to be enough if we look at the results from my studies. Should I mention?
Okay. So that's fascinating. So let's break that down. So for cold exposure, 11 minutes per week, broken up into 2 to 3 sessions. So really only a couple minutes in the cold water, a cold lake, an ice tub or a shower or, you know, whatever you have access to. That's really not that long. Talk about, you'd kind of said it's very activating. It would be good to do a cold immersion, you know, before a podcast or before you need to do something where you're really using your brain because you're getting the noradrenaline. So is it advantageous to do a couple minutes of cold exposure in the morning? Would it make a difference if they did it in the morning versus doing it in the evening?
Yeah, there could be many reasons to figure out what works best for you, because some people, I feel very tired in the morning, and then I would definitely advise that people do a cold, they end on the cold shower, because it's going to give them that energy and drive, which they normally maybe would have from drinking 4 cups of coffee or whatever to get that energy spike. But the cold shower could probably just give them that. So maybe skip some of the cups of coffee and just take a cold shower. That's going to give them that energy. But you could also, if you are a person who feels that you lack energy in the middle of the day or the end of the day or like in the afternoon, then you can take a cold shower there or a cold plunge. That's also going to give you that energy and drive. But if you cold plunge, that's also going to give you that resilience afterward, that same feeling of mental balance. And that is also really helpful for you to you can say, after a stressful day, that get over all those overwhelming thoughts and from the day. So that is also a way to do it. But I would say that I compare the cold immersion and cold showers to like coffee, because that's how it works for me as well. So I would not do it after 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And that's because it really activates your sympathetic nervous system. So your stress and your fight and flight system. So you really don't want that too late on the day, because you also need to think about, you have to go to bed at some time and be at rest. So maybe figure out whether what works for you, morning, afternoon, but try to end on the heat in the evening. So if you, for example, run out of time and you want to do a cold plunge, then if it's before bedtime, you could end in the sauna or in a hot shower or what you use for modality, but end on the heat in the evening is going to put you a little bit more to the restful side.
Okay. So we've talked a lot about the benefits of cold exposure when it comes to our metabolic health, preventing insulin resistance and chronic disease by activation of the brown fat. I just had Dr. Chris Palmer on my podcast talking about mental health, because in America, it's a huge problem, anxiety, yeah, depression. So I wanted to highlight some of the other benefits of cold therapy. How does cold plunging, winter swimming help somebody that might be suffering with like anxiety or depression?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I have to say that we still lack studies that really investigate this. We need that, because we need to know how much and also how long, and we need to know what kind of patients would benefit from this. If we are talking about patients, if we are talking about taking away medication and do that as a substitute for it, or even, yeah. So that's, I think we lack some studies about that, but we can talk about what happens. So physiology and in the biologies
The physiologic changes that happen
we can
show benefits for people. Yeah.
Yeah. So we can talk about what happens in our physiology. That's gonna, you can say that we could talk about the physiology.
Improve our mood.
Yeah. I'm looking for something else. But the word is gone. Okay. So we can talk about what happens in our physiology, which would, push to the side that this could actually be a very good idea to use for anxiety and also depression. So there was actually this one study, a case study showing that a 24-year-old girl or woman, it is, who was on a lot of medication, and she used cold water for a year to see if she could, you can say, get rid of some of her medication, and showed that after 4 months, where the scientists have followed her and made a program for her, she went to swim every day during these 4 months. And during that period of time, she got rid of more and more of her depression medication. And she even said to the scientists afterwards that she really felt that she was getting out of this fog of side effects, but also feeling that she was in this fog all the time because of the medication. And now she feels more, you can say, in the presence and alive. And that really shows, I think this case study shows that this could actually be a way to go. And that's because what happens when you go into the cold and you can get over the cold shock is that you both get an activation of noradrenaline, gives you focus. You have an activation of the dopamine neurotransmitters in the brain, which gives you drive and motivation, as I just said, and gives you a lot of energy. You also have an activation of the serotonin in the brain, which stands for mental balance, but you also increase oxytocin, which also gives you this feeling of love and gratitude, both for other people, but also for yourself. And that's going to maybe open a new door for you, which makes you more positive minded about many things in the world. And I think this door could be a gateway for many people who suffer from depression and seeing world in another perspective, you can say. And I do see this when I go out and meet people in the culture, the clubs. We have this culture, especially in Denmark, we have these clubs where people meet up and they go winter swim together. And you can totally tell that there is this fascinating culture where people, like, they go plunge and they have this surrounding as if they were alone in the world, but they just connect. And I know, and I looked this up because I was like, there's something going on here. And it's not a Danish phenomenon. It's not like just us, even though we are the Vikings. But I think this is because we increase oxytocin in the brain. And this is shown in my studies also. So it really increases in the cold. So when people have anxiety and they can go into the cold and they rehearse to, you can say, get to lower their stress level by lowering their breath. They can use this as a tool to practice to get less panic attacks and get less anxiety. And even when they do, they can practice to control it better. And in that way, you can use the cold water immersion as a way of increasing your stress threshold. So this can be used as a tool, both for people who has anxiety, but also maybe as a cure, but we would need more studies for that.
Okay, so this is incredible. I can see why this helps people's mood, why it elevates their mood. And I'm totally with you, kind of this like community tribe thing. Maybe we all just need, friends to support us and encourage us, because it is a scary thing for most people, this thought of like getting in an ice bath. So talk about, if they're doing this 11 minutes a week, what is the ideal way to start? Is it best to just jump in and submerge yourself? Or I see people try to inch in, maybe just their feet. The times that I've done it, I feel like it's best to just dive in and then start to focus on breath. What do you do? How did you kind of get into this?
Yeah, so I would say that this, again, really is an individual thing. Or I really think that it should be an individual thing. Because what you do when you submerge, you go into the cold waters, you activate the sympathetic nervous system. And if you, depending on how sensitive your nervous system is, so if you are prone to having anxiety, for example, I would say be a little bit careful when you do that. So maybe go in step by step, which is like going in maybe to the navel and then catch your breath by trying to like do circles of like breathing in through your nose, nasal breathing, and then see if you can switch completely to inhale and exhale through the nose, and then go another step in. So if you can get to that point, but some people are like, just get it over with and just let me just jump in. And people can do that, and then they will get the full cold shock immediately. But I would say be careful about that, because some people actually get a panic attack just from doing that, because you get a cold shock right away. And that is really stressful for both your cardiovascular system, but it's also a huge increase in all your neurotransmitters in the brain, which is going to be the cortisol, noradrenaline, and adrenaline coming from both neurotransmitters, also the hormones, and it's a big shock for many people. So I would say be careful about this and go step by step in the beginning, but you could also, if you feel comfortable enough, just do a full submersion up to the neck. You don't have to dive in, dunk your head into the water. There's no reason to. But yeah, that's how you can do it.
If somebody is thinking about, because I don't have a cold, lake around here, winter swimming, if somebody is looking to get an ice bath or something at their home, is there certain things they should be looking for in a product that optimizes your protocol? Or is it just finding water that's the right temperature?
Yeah, I definitely think that's one of the things that I think is really good for your metabolism is when you change the temperature. And this is what I call the thermalist. So it's a thermalist is something that I had defined. It's a word that I had missed my whole research. And it's when you do the contrast therapy where you switch from the cold to the heat, but you also change the temperature, because that's going to increase your metabolism and keep it on its toes all the time. Because when you get adapted to one temperature, I mean, that's not going to change much after that. So it's just like going to the gym. You change the repetition, how you do your exercise, and you also change the weight on your, the kilos on your weights. Yeah. So think about the cold as your cold training center. It's going to work for you on your metabolism and your nervous system if you keep changing the temperatures and the weights all the time. You don't have to get heavier and heavier, I mean, in colder and colder temperature, because obviously you can't go lower at some point, but then go up again a bit. And it's going to vary the cold shock for you, and also keep your cells activated in different ways. And this is called hormesis, when we stress the cells just enough to make it stronger. So we increase the heat shock proteins in the cells, which will build it stronger and repair the cells, but also not doing it too long will not exhaust the cells. So this is what I call the exhaustion of the cells, which means that you have maybe increased the stress situation for too long, and that's gonna age the cells too fast. So, but what you could look for in a cold plunge would be that maybe circulation, that it circulates the water. That would be one thing to break the thermal barrier. And this is something that I think Andrew Huberman talks a lot about, breaking the thermal barrier. It's not a problem in Denmark because we just use the nature, and that's going to circle just right for you. And also it would vary the temperatures. If you have natural lakes and you can use that kind of water, nature is going to do all the work for you. But if you have to buy a plunge, I think that, think about that. And also think about not always put ice in. You don't need it. Cold temperatures are cold when it's just 15 degrees and below. So you don't really need ice in the water. You just vary the temperature. But that, yeah, that is how I think you should activate your brown fat and your metabolism and your nervous system.
It makes sense. Like when I go to the gym, 1 week I do 12 repetitions, then 10, then, you know, and change the weight. That totally makes sense. So you have talked a little bit about contrast therapy. So let's kind of shift to talking about heat, but kind of one question I have is it good to do cold plunge and sauna in the same session, and which way should you do it? Heat first, cold first, or is it more advantageous to do them like on different days?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I love that. And so many people actually ask this, and I see why. And it really depends on where you come from, I think. So have you just had an exercise? Did you come from your training center and you want to do a cold plunge? Or did you just come from work? Or, I think it really depends on the situation. But if we just talk about what you do on the session, so when you go there, if you are able to do contrast therapy in the same, you can say, day or session, then I would say start in the cold, because then you will decrease the skin temperature, and then you go into the sauna, and then you will have more time in the sauna to sit there before you get overheated, because often people come to the sauna already really hot because they've been running, or they come from work, and they are actually warm enough, and maybe even a little bit stressed. So I think the cold plunge before is going to lower their stress level if they can sit there until the cold shock subsides. And they can sit in the sauna and relax afterwards, and maybe sit there for 10, 15 minutes and heat up their skin. So if you go directly to the sauna, you will maybe not be able to sit there that long. But important is, if you go for the sauna and then back to the cold water, that you cool off a bit in the wind, because otherwise you will definitely get a very large cold shock if you go directly into the cold water. And you can almost think that that's gonna like cold burn your skin. So be careful about that, because you will numb the skin a bit.
So in between sauna and a cold plunge, you want to ambiently warm or cool just based on the air temperature. Because I always thought when you cold plunge that if you just run into the sauna, are you losing some brown fat activation as opposed to just sitting at room temperature and allowing your body to ambiently rewarm?
Yeah, I mean, you could. People do that. They run to the sauna, and that's because the body tells
you want comfort.
Escape, yeah. And I think it's fine. You get the activation anyways. And just doing this practice is perfect. But if you want every little benefit and a little bit of tweaks here, then I think that you can also stand there in the wind. But remember, this is like for the hardcore. Those are the people who are already adapted to the cold water. So if you're a beginner, think about that you will not be the coldest in the cold water. You will be colder even when you go up. That's because of something that's called the after drop. So if you are new to this and you're not cold adapted, then please go directly to the sauna, because you have to have a good experience so you will come back. Yeah. Otherwise, you could get too cold and you will not know until you get home, maybe, because the after drop is going to make your temperature decrease even more in your core. So, but just stand a bit in the wind, you can do that if you want the full activation. It happens already in the water and before you go in. So I don't think that you will reap that much from that. So the little walk up to the sauna is going to be fine to acclimate, and then you can sit in the sauna, and that's going to activate your brown fat as well. So I don't think you will lose the activation.
Right. You said with sauna therapy, about 57 minutes per week broken up into a couple sessions. So we're talking 15, 20 minute sessions, depending on how many minutes you're doing it. Are there benefits of heat and sauna therapy that you don't get with cold therapy? Or is it the same benefits? They're just two ends of the extreme.
Can you ask me again?
Yeah. Sorry. So with sauna therapy, is there heating? Is, you know, we've talked about with cold therapy.
You will cut this out, right? You will make that.
Yeah.
You can cut it. Good.
So with cold therapy, we get brown fat activation, we get noradrenaline, we get dopamine. What are some of the benefits of sauna therapy that maybe you don't get with cold therapy? Or are they similar? They're just two different ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, so we know more about actually the benefits also on the long term for the sauna, for the heat exposure. But if you look at the cell level, we know that that heat stress is going to activate the heat shock proteins in the cells, which are different from the stress proteins from exposure to the cold. So it's going to activate the cells in different but probably overlapping ways. But it's just the stress in general on the cells, if we call that healthy stress, that's going to make the cells robust. And also, if we look at the brown fat, it's going to activate both in the cold, but also in the heat. So it's going to have overlapping effects, but it's going to be in different ways. If we look at the mitochondria, for example, you would increase mitochondria from going into the cold water, but in the heat, you will have a better or if more efficient, in the heat, you will reap the benefits of having more mitochondria by making them more efficient. So you would use the higher energy in the cells in the heat. So it works on different ways on the cells. So that's why I think it's really good if you can get both heat and cold into your life. That's going to increase your metabolism in different and overlapping ways.
If somebody was feeling like they were going to getting sick or getting ill, is heat or cold more advantageous for our immune system? Like if we're fighting off a cold or fighting, you know, an illness?
Yeah. So I think that if you have a cold, then you should just avoid getting too stressed, because it's going to make your immune system focus on fighting off the cold stress.
Right.
And yeah, especially the cold, because it's more potent than going into hot air, for example, in a sauna. So cold exposure, cold water immersion, if you have a cold, I would not advise that. Just like we say that if you are sick, don't go to the gym, because the body just needs to rest. So do that, just rest if you're sick. But it is maybe if we look at having a small, like a beginning of a cold, and you feel, oh, there's something in my throat, then maybe actually if you can do that in the beginning during like incubation, maybe in when the virus starts to like pick up on your body and tries to take over, you can maybe go into the sauna and get but when you then go into the sauna, you might be lucky that you can get rid of the virus, but not from the cold.
Yeah, I was just like you, because we get a fever for a reason. It heats the body to try to combat it. So I was just wondering if sauna mimics that in a way, if it really heats the body enough.
It does, definitely. So we also, if we have cells in a Petri box, you can say in the laboratory, we would also just heat them, because then they'll just die. So it's exactly the same. But if we want to keep the cells, we put them in the freezer, right? So so we don't really, if you're sick, you don't really want to expose yourself to cold water. That's just going to give, you will actually give the virus time to really get a hold of hold of you. So because the immune system gets distracted by the cold shock, and in the heat, it won't get activated. The heat shock stress system will not get activated as quickly. So the heat is just going to help killing this virus that you have.
Interesting. It just made me I wasn't going to ask this question, but it just made me think of something. So there are times in medicine, in healthcare, where we use cryotherapy, cold therapy with spinal cord injuries or babies that might, their brain might be compromised. We cool these babies down to help preserve the neurologic function and try to protect it. Is there advantage if somebody is dealing with, let's say, MS or some other neurologic condition? Does it help these patients? Or I was even thinking about like cancer. You were talking about how heating the cell kills it and cold preserves it. Are you aware of like any research where these modalities might be helpful for patients with these conditions?
I would say maybe a little bit too early to talk about that.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm really, I don't think that I would go that, we would need a little bit more.
We don't know enough. Yeah.
We don't know enough. I wouldn't talk about that.
Yeah.
It's because we don't know enough. Yeah. But it's really fascinating. It's because we know so much about the physiology now. We know how it activates the brown fat and how it really, you can say, activates all our cells and all our systems in our body. And it seems like it repairs everything that's going on, especially inflammation. And if you can do something with inflammation, it can lower inflammation. It's going to be helpful for so many diseases, which has inflammation as a root cause, right? And that's also neurological diseases and depression and many diseases. Right. So we will see down the road what this will have for outcomes on these diseases. I think it's going to be interesting.
Absolutely. So I think one of the key things with, especially with cold immersion, is breath. And you talk a lot about functional breathing and breath work. Can you talk about why that is so important and what it does to our body that helps our health?
Yeah. So functional breathing means that you get a breathing rhythm and breathing pattern that is going to decrease your stress level in your body. It's going to help you have a more functional life, have a better sleep, and you will have a better work day. You would have a better, you'll be more mindful, more focused. So your breathing is really the key also for heat exposure and cold exposure. And you don't really think about your breath as being that important to your life, but it really is. If you have a functional breathing, a breathing pattern that is slow, deep, and low, that's going to help you coming or switching from your stress level during maybe the day, but also switching to your rest and digest system, which is the parasympathetic nervous system. So there's probably many people walking around and breathing through their mouth. And when they do that, they activate the sympathetic nervous system just by doing that mechanical thing by opening the mouth and breathe through the mouth. That's automatically activating our sympathetic nervous system. So if you want less stress in your life, you should close your mouth and then breathe through the nose all the time if you can, besides maybe heavy exercise. But try to see if you can get through the day if you're just walking and walking up the stairs, and see if you can actually breathe through the nose instead of breathing through the mouth. So that's going to help you get more rest and more focused and give you more energy. And that's going to help you in your everyday life. And actually also that helps you increase your it's going to help you decrease your sensitivity to carbon dioxide. So that's actually the main goal for this. So if you can do nasal breathing during the day, then you will decrease the sensitivity and you will use every breath in a better way. So all your cells will get more out of every breath, you could say. So the oxygen will have a better delivery to all your cells in the body. So when you do that, you will be better at controlling your nervous system and also controlling your nervous system when you go out and cold plunging and you sit in the sauna, and you don't get breathless that easily. So that's how you can do that.
That's my technique, is I go all the way to my neck and then I just immediately start thinking about my breathing. And I had my young daughter who wanted to try, and I told her this. I said, just get in and then control your breath. And I videotaped it, and I was kind of coaching her through the breathing, but she was successful. She stayed in for like 2 minutes, and this was very cold water. I mean, major shock. But I think that that is an important way to find success with cold plunging, is focusing on breath. So you had alluded to the fact you have like a school, you have a course, online courses, you've got this new book coming out. So tell people a little bit about your teachings and your work and how they might be able to benefit from that.
Yeah, because I think there's been so many questions going my way towards both the cold and the heat and the breathing, and also my book. So I have made a course just to help the end user use this in a beneficial way and tell them what is the benefits of this and also how to do it. So very practical, very like short videos in this course where I teach people how to use cold and heat and functional breathing to increase their health in their life. So it's for the end user, but it's also just to give you all the benefits that we know on a long term, but also on the short term, how to do it and what is my principles with micro-stressing, and also to increase safety out there, because I think I see also some extreme things going on. So I want to tell people that you really don't need that, and how you can do it in a more beneficial way, which is going to give you beneficial effects also on the long term, because the extreme things, we won't see maybe the detrimental effects right now, but we might see that down the road. So I have made a course so people can come and learn this. It's a 3-week course, and it's on my webpage on soberginstitute.com. And there you can also find links to my book called Winter Swimming, where you can read about my studies and my research, and also what benefits you get from cold and heat.
That's so wonderful. So you guys,
can I just say the code? I have a code for you. I made a code for you, actually.
Yeah.
So just because now I'm on your podcast, I think that we should give your listeners a discount. So I have made a discount for this 3-week Thermalist course. It's 10%, and if you just write fit in the code, then you will get 10% off for this 3-week course.
Fantastic. So FIT, F-I-T, 10% off the Thermalist course. Dr. Susanna Soberg, this has been so incredible. You guys, just a reminder, you can go to her website, www.sobergerinstitute.com. She also has an incredible social media. I've been following her on Instagram, Susanna_Soberg, and you can see her out in the lakes, like natural water. She looks so calm and beautiful. Just like, it's very serene. I can just like watch the reels over and over again. She makes it look so easy. But just in summary, you guys, 11 minutes of cold exposure, 57 minutes of sauna or heat therapy, contrast therapy, breath work. These things can add so much to your life. It can make you feel so good. I have definitely started to incorporate these. I'm in the middle, Susanna, of building this room in my house where I'm going to have a sauna and a cold plunge. And it was supposed to be done this last year, but the ground froze here in the middle of where I live. So we have to wait till spring, but it's coming. And then you're going to see lots of content from me about my cold plunges and sauna. So much.
Wow.
More.
I love that. I'm looking forward to see you do that. Yeah. That's crazy.
So,
where do you live? Actually, I didn't ask before.
Yeah, I'm in Nebraska. So like middle of the United States. We're in winter now, so it gets down. We talk in, of course, Fahrenheit, not Celsius, but it's been down to like 10, 20 degrees Fahrenheit here. So it's quite cold outside. And for now, I just have a big horse trough with water. And but outside in the air, it gets pretty cold. So
yeah, you can also just do that. You can just go out in a t-shirt and get the exposure, and you will also activate your brown fat. I find it fascinating. You can do so many things.
I love it. Okay, everybody listening, you guys, get your brown fat activated and tell all your friends and family. Please share this with people, because we really rely on all of you listeners to spread these messages all over the world. And literally, we're across the world right now, which is so cool. Yes. So, well, Dr. Soberg, this was so wonderful. We'll catch you guys on the next episode.
Did you guys love that last episode of the Fit and Fabulous podcast? Well, of course you did. And I want to keep bringing you the most amazing content from the most incredible people. And you can help me by subscribing to the Dr. Fit and Fabulous channel. You guys know where the button is. Just click it. It's the doctor's orders.